Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
All right, Marcia Lycan, how are you?
Good. I'm just fine. Happy to be here.
I'm thrilled to have you. Yeah, we were talking off the air here. I don't know when. Did I just miss it, or did you recently decide to become share more thoughts on X? Was that a recent decision, or was I missing it beforehand?
I think it probably escalated the most surrounding the whole NCAA settlement, and you know, when we went through sort of round one of what we're going through now a couple of years ago. I always have been inclined to voice my opinions and thoughts, but I think that's when it really escalated and caught some traction, started to get a lot of followers. It's funny because head coach Julie always gives me a hard time. Not a hard time, but she says, "Oh, you're famous. You have so many followers." And I said, "Well, I only have 3,000, which is very small. It's just such a targeted market. When we go to showcases, they're all there. Probably half of those 3,000 are there. So it seems like more than it is."
Yeah, well, I'm out at quite a few events, and then I talk to a lot of coaches, and your name has been starting to come up a lot, all positive.
Yeah,
but
good.
People
so far.
Appreciate honesty. There's so much people, there's so many people out there that are telling people things to help themselves.
Right.
Not because it's honest per se, but they're pushing an agenda instead of just saying what they feel. And I think that's why you're resonating.
Well, good. I'm glad. Glad you're hearing good things. I try to be straightforward. You know, I think a lot of that is probably just due to my age and experience, life experience, sort of where I'm sitting now versus, you know, some other coaches and even where I would have been when I was, you know, much younger. I've raised 3 children. So I think being a mom and a parent gives you a completely different perspective. I think.
Absolutely.
I coached club for a very long time before I got into college. And my favorite part of that was sort of being a champion for these young ladies and doing what you do now, just helping them achieve their dreams. And I was in Maine and it was very low level travel soccer, but many of them did go on to play in college. And I did a lot on my own time, on my own dime, just because I had that experience myself and loved helping the next generation. So I think having that perspective of being on the club side of it and through their lens, recruiting and looking at it from that angle has probably, you know, it's changed my perspective a little bit too. Even though I'm on the other side of it now, it's just broadened my understanding of it.
How old are your kids now?
Oh, now you're dating me. I remember when I was younger and my mom always used to lie about our ages and I never understood why. I'm like, why are you care what how old we are? And now I make it, you know, I understand it. It makes me seem old. But my eldest, Allie, is going to be 32 this summer, pregnant with my second grandchild, my son Cooper is right behind her. And then my youngest Brody is 27, 28. They're all within about 4.5 years. And my two oldest went to West Point. So that was in and of itself.
I'm giving you a massive compliment. I asked you because I would not have imagined that your kids were that old. Yeah, having adult kids and having grandkids is mind blowing.
Yeah, it's great. And that's a big perspective changer as well.
Are they all kind of local to you?
Nope, they're all over, given the Army background. My daughter's, she's by trade a Black Hawk pilot in the Army, but she's currently back at West Point with her dream job teaching the cadets in the Department of Behavioral Science and Leadership. And My son with Special Forces, he got out of the Army and started his own business in Nashville. And then my youngest is down in Florida, so they're all up and down the East Coast.
Right. Okay. So yeah. So we've got to be close to the same age then, and
I'll be 60
it's
this year. I'm not afraid to admit
I
it.
got you beat a little bit then. I'm 63 this year, so I won't put you in my class. Yeah. We don't need to push things faster than they are.
No.
But what I was going to say is that we have seen a lot of change. We've seen more changes in the past 5 years, I think, than we did in the previous 40
Yeah,
in terms of
great.
college soccer.
Yeah.
I would say things were very, very stable
Yeah.
in college sports in general,
Yeah.
going back to the 50s. No real changes per se. And then all of a sudden, I think NIL was probably and revenue sharing was probably the
Yeah.
first major share. Well, the portal. I remember, can't
Right. That
remember
was
what
kind of the
coach that
first
was,
change. They
but the portal was.
yeah, and
What do you think of the
it's
portal in general? Just comparing the way things used to be, and the way things now. Do you think there was a massive problem
Well,
before needed?
my first foray into Division One was when I came to William & Mary, at age 52-ish. Took me my whole life to get my dream job. I had a whole life previously, ran my own business, and things just sort of came together here with Julie, who was a teammate of mine and had an illustrious career at Princeton and other schools. So it's kind of funny because I think things were normal when I started, and then I think the first thing that happened shortly after we returned to William & Mary was the big change in the recruiting rules itself, where it went from being able to communicate with the kids all through high school, with certain restrictions, to then, no communication at all. So that was the first big thing. And then I guess the next was the portal, and then the next was the whole settlement and NIL mess. But I didn't know life much before the portal, maybe just for a couple of years. And I mean, I think it's good for the student athletes. I imagine prior to that, they didn't have much control over their future. I think that the whole transfer process was in the hands of coaches and administrators who had to sign paperwork and give permission and things like that. So I do agree with this generation and how things have gone. It's really right and fair for them to have the portal. But I also think it's gotten crazy, mostly with basketball, more than anything else. And these new changes, it looks like, in my opinion anyway, that will be the best thing that comes out of it if they limit the transfers back to a year, because I think that's just keeps things reasonable.
Yeah, it was. I mean, my own son went through this. He had played for Coach BJ Craig at St. Francis in Pennsylvania, and then Coach Casper came in right on the heels of it, and my son and decided he would like to explore the portal, and then you had to get a signature from the coach, a signature from the
Right,
AD. If they said no, yes, you could appeal it, but at that point, it's like you're suing somebody. So
that doesn't seem
how's
right.
that going to go for you? It's
Yeah,
going to become acrimonious. Then even if you
right.
end up staying, and he was very lucky. His coach signed off, AD signed off, he explored, they expected him back and accepted him back, and then he finished his career. But that, I'm not sure how common that was
Right.
in the. So anyhow, I think in general it's good. I it's What bothers me is how easy it is
Yeah.
for players and coaches to
Right.
use the portal as an excuse, coaches
Right.
to get rid of players,
Right.
and then players to say, oh, well, I've been here 4 months as a freshman,
Right.
and it didn't go like I dreamed, so therefore I'm
Yeah.
going to transfer. And then they go to the next school, and then they transfer again, and it's like,
Yeah.
I that part makes it, it's almost too easy.
Yeah, it's gone from one extreme to the other, really. And it seems like there should be some sort of a happy medium, which is ho hopefully what they're trying to do by legislating the single transfer.
Yeah, I do hope, I do hope so. And then it's crazy. There was a post that I can't remember, somebody made and you commented on it. But they were talking about players graduating early, going in for the spring so they'd be prepared for fall, and then coaches are releasing those kids already. It's like, that's insane.
Our friends at our friends at IMU Soccer shared that. Yeah, I don't know how that can happen, or even a school would allow that to happen. That is kind of crazy.
I think that's what bothers me. It's so easy for an AD to say, no, that's not what we want. But all I can think of is, how bad are you at identifying talent and recruiting players that if that's the way it's, if that's what you've done? And I feel that same way for coaches that release players after their freshman year. For you to expect a freshman to come in and impact your team is just not realistic.
And that's my whole objection with the roster limits. And I feel like sometimes I'm talking till I'm blue in the face because people on social media are reading all these things, and they don't really understand our world. And I think one of the larger issues with the whole eligibility rule, roster limits, all of that is every sport is so different. And you start to see this come out on social media where people are arguing with me from a basketball perspective or a football perspective, and they're right, because the recruiting cycles, the process, the roster sizes, the culture, everything is so different from sport to sport. If we were being honest, the roster limits and transferring and all that stuff should be different from sport to sport. I understand the reasons they kind of can't do that, because then they're just setting themselves up for more lawsuits and Title IX. Everything has to be equitable. But I think our situation of women's soccer is very, very specific, and everything I argue on social media is just speaking from us living in this world, and a lot of people don't see that and don't understand it. But it's gonna create mayhem if they. I've my biggest point has been the roster limits, which were unprecedented. That already is tough to deal with, and I think we're dealing with a very inequitable situation. Because I don't know who the grand authority of roster determination was, or how they arrived at 28. No one asked
Well,
us.
it was a crazy thing is it was a committee, and then they had no soccer representation on that committee, which
Okay,
is
so that's the first I've
bonkers.
heard that, and that's not surprising. Anytime I hear the word committee, I know right away that it's probably worthless when you're talking
You
about committees.
logic would have said that they would have had a representative from every sport who could tell you the whys and the cows, because look, tw for those that are listening, and some people may not be up on this, because people still don't understand based on the questions I get, certainly from
No, they
parents every
don't.
day. So soccer was in the House versus NCAA settlement. The decision was made that in soccer, the roster limit would be 28, which all of us that have coached said, that's insane. I can't even have, if I can't have four goalkeepers on my staff, that
Thank
goes
you.
against everything that soccer's ever done,
Right.
just
That's a
because
big.
you've got to have those young developing keepers.
Yeah, that's a big point. And with 28 as a percentage, you can't have four goalkeepers. It's just too
No.
many. Head coach Julie was at Princeton for a very long career, 20 years, and she has PTSD from goalkeepers, because there was one year she had three goalkeepers and ended up in the midst of a very, very successful season, having to go to a field player down the stretch because one did their ACL, one went out a concussion, and then one did something else. And so she was always insistent that we had four. And it kind of works when you have four classes, one for each class. It's a good training group. They learn from each other. But yeah, we now are finding ourselves with three at the most, because we just can't handle it. But a lot of people based on club and high school and other things, and the numbers on the field are like, well, 28, that's plenty. How could you possibly want more than that? There's people sitting on the bench. But the reality is, take away the goalies, take away all of your injured players. And again, those of us who know soccer, we all either have experienced it or know a team who has had 4 to 5 ACLs in a single year. That can happen in soccer. And if not ACLs, it's not unusual to be dealing with 6, 7 injuries at any one time, at any point in the season, soft tissue injuries, ankle rolls, whatever it may be. So, take away the keepers, 25, take away the injured reserve, as I call them, and now you're down to the teens, and you can't
Well,
have
and
productive
then
training.
Marcia, what parents don't ever think about, I think only coaches really think about this, and this depends on your theory as a coach. Some coaches are just don't show up drunk and we're good. Do whatever else you want in a year. But I wasn't. I was a three strikes and you're out guy. No drinking, no drugs. A, most of you are too young anyway, so it is illegal. And we're not going to condone breaking the law. And so I had to have enough players that they couldn't hold me hostage, that I could actually discipline them and tell them, I'm sorry, you're suspended for a game, right? You're suspended for two. So there's in a disciplined program, there's always one or two kids that are under, have broken a team rule at some point. That's gonna happen because they're just kids and they're learning, and they're
You
trying to push
need,
boundaries and they need to be
of course.
disciplined.
Yeah, and you need
So.
numbers that are going to promote, a healthy training environment to be able to have productive training with numbers. You need numbers that are going to support a healthy competition. If you're dealing with 15, 16, there's not many subs, and they probably already know who they are. And but I think the overarching issue I have is when you compare it to other sports, there seems to be no rationale,
Right.
and my biggest one is lacrosse. And lacrosse has one more player on the field than we do, and they have a roster limit of 38. So no one's been
I
able
can
to
guarantee
explain
there was a
to me.
without knowing, I'll bet there was a lacrosse coach on the committee.
Probably. And I think, when you're looking at men's and women's lacrosse, they're very, very, very different sports, unlike soccer. And I think you'd have more of an argument for the men's side because, they have the face-off guys who are very specialty positions. But women's lacrosse, I did the analytics of our team at William & Mary and looked at their sub rotation, very, very similar to ours, where they routinely play, 16, 17 a game at the most. So I don't know why they were given a 38 roster limit, and I don't want 35 on a team. I don't want 34. I don't want 32. We lived through that with COVID, and 5th years. A lot of our 5th years stayed, and we weren't ever going to cut anyone, so our roster sort of ballooned. But to me, the magic number is 30, because if you have 30, then you can hold a couple of spots. So if you do see a kid in the portal, or you can absorb the 5th years more easy. Right now at 28, it's very hard to operate under 28, at least for us. And
I think there it is for anybody who's coached a while
yeah,
knows that's a
so the
very
only
difficult
way
one.
is you're either, with this 5th year situation, you're either decommitting kids or cutting kids. And we have not cut a single kid since we've been at this program. We don't intend to, unless our hand is forced. And this, I think that's why it's just got me so worked up, because it looks to me like our hand is going to be forced, and we will be forced into doing things we've never done before because of an NCAA decision that's very poorly rolled out, with no thought, with no talking to coaches, with no understanding, what our specific world is in the women's soccer world, which probably is a lot different than even men's soccer. Our timeline for recruiting is much different than men's soccer. So I don't
Oh
think they are impacted enough.
yeah. It was something else I wanted to talk about too, but we'll stay on this and we'll come back to that, because I thought you made a really good point the other day talking about timelines in the women's side. And I I know that men don't understand it because men see the boys see how early the female get recruited and expect the same thing, and it can't ever be the same thing for a number of reasons that I've talked about before, and we can get
Yeah.
into that for in a minute, but let's stay on the five. Let's stay on the rule changes in general, other than the backup. Just in general, what do you think of the 5-5 proposal that looks like it's going to pass at the Division One level, folks? Okay,
Yeah.
Division Two tabled it until I think 2028. But I'm guessing they'll revisit it, but it's just a guess. And my
Yeah.
guess is Division Three doesn't give two toots. They don't
Yeah.
care.
Yeah.
They don't care. They may never change it. They may change it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But Division Three is a whole different animal,
Yeah.
there
Yeah.
for a whole nother set of reasons. But what do you think of the 5-5 in general?
Well, I think it's going to be a blockbuster change. I think my this is what I don't really understand, and sometimes I think I just have a different perspective, a different analytical mind. You know, when these decisions are made, I always kind of look at it from a different lens. But so this is my main objection. So right now, everybody has 4 years of eligibility. You always have since the beginning of time. Great. If someone in soccer especially blows out their ACL and you know, I'm also looking at it from the lens that it happens in our sport way more than other sports. It's a very cruel epidemic that especially the women's soccer game is plagued with. So it is a regular occurrence. So someone blows out their ACL, they are allowed to appeal and take that extra year, which always has seemed fair, right? You know, through no fault of their own, they get injured. So they're getting another year of eligibility to add up to the four that everyone else who's uninjured gets. So now they're going to five, and my understanding is they're doing five. I mean, I think it's mostly because of football, because everyone in football seemed to be redshirting on the regular. They were all doing 5 years. But my lack of understanding is, so let's fast forward, wave the magic wand. Everybody has 5 years starting today. So you'll have 5 years in college, 5 years of playing the sport that you love. So when I blow out my ACL and I don't get the 5 years that everyone else had, I should be able to appeal just like always. And if not, I think I have a pretty good lawsuit. And to me, like, that's where I don't understand what's the difference with four or five. If they gave everybody four and you were allowed to compensate for your injury, which seems fair, now they're giving everyone five. So why do I not have to compensate for my injury now? That's what no one has seemed to be able to explain to me, or I haven't read it really addressed anywhere.
No, all I've heard is arguments, and there's some decent arguments. It's like, well, look, if the average career of an NFL lineman is 3.5 years, and they get injured 1 year, and they only play 2.5 years, they just lose a year. That's what an injury does. It makes you lose a year. I thought, well, yeah, I guess if you youth soccer, same thing. You tear your ACL, you lose a whole year of youth soccer. That's just what you lose.
But
I thought,
except there's no
eh,
one,
okay.
there's no one handing out eligibility. There's no one dictating their eligibility of how long they get to play, which the NCAA does. So it's a whole different
Yeah,
animal.
no. Well, sort of in youth soccer, because you're only eligible to play till you're 18, right? There's no youth soccer after
Right.
that. So sort of,
Right.
and I kind of
Yeah.
understand. The NCAA really should come out with an explanation as to why they're
Yeah.
doing it. Because I think I tend to lean more towards, look, I'm just playing devil's advocate. I'm just telling you some of the arguments,
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think I agree. I think I agree with you. It doesn't. I don't know how Canada handles it. I need to talk to some of my buddies up there. I'm curious because they've always had 5 years.
Yeah.
They
Yeah. I
they've
mean,
always had 5 years.
I think in theory it's good, and I don't have a problem with it personally or theoretically, but I just think it's going to be difficult for them to defend a lawsuit of someone in that situation who is being, ribbed out of a year of eligibility from an injury standpoint when that's what they've always done, So I don't know.
Right.
I don't really have a feeling towards the 5 years, good or bad. For me, it's just mostly how it's going to negatively impact recruiting and roster management. It's going to make it damn near impossible. And I don't think anybody's thought that through.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that. Because the issue we have on the guys' side, not as much on the girls' side, on the women's side, but what we have on the men's side is that we've got primarily international players, although it's not exclusive. My son was a 20-year-old freshman because he spent 2 years in Europe, which left him four to complete four instead of five to complete four, and he came in as a 20-year-old freshman, and then. The first year he was a starter, he was 21.
Yeah, but he'd be really, in this modern day, he'd be really hurt by that rule, right? He'd lose half his
Right.
eligibility before he even started.
And then what's happening internationally is we're coming in with, 25-year-old freshmen who only have, a year or two of eligibility. They don't care. They're just trying to extend
Right.
their playing and get in front of the pro crowd for one more year as they develop. And then they didn't have an intention of getting a degree. It's never what
Yeah.
they wanted. They're using college soccer and then going back to Europe, and it's worked. It's
Yeah. Yeah.
worked for players. It's worked for their careers, not all of them, but so what happens is the complaint then is, how does my 18-year-old compete with a 25-year-old freshman? And
Right.
my answer has always been that they don't. Nobody's telling them to. But
Right.
that 25-year-old isn't going to be there for 4 years, and your 18-year-old would have sat for a year or two anyways.
Most likely.
So you're using this as an excuse for your kid because your kid's not national team level, and those are the most of the freshmen on the men's side, especially that are starting, are clo they're the pro close to the pro level. They're at least with pro academies, DC Uniteds and stuff. But I've got a client now. It, he, he was with DC United and then, went to a Power Four, and then he's not going to play for. Co coaches told him, "You're not going to play for a couple of years," and he's like, "Well, now I want to transfer then, step down a level, mid-major," and so that's fine. That is one of the things that they're addressing in this. So for those that are listening, it's the when you graduate college or 19, whichever is first, then you get your 5 years from then. And it's a shame because they're mixed. In other words, people will go, "Oh, I support the five and five because it'll limit the ages." It's like, no, two separate issues. They just addressed them in the same legislation.
But I think the biggest takeaway from everything you just said is how different all the sports are, and it really, to me, there's not really a cookie cutter solution that the NCAA can apply to everybody, because there's such unique situations and challenges from men's soccer to women's soccer, football, baseball, basketball. They're all different. So it's a struggle to try and find one solution that's going to be good for everybody, and you won't.
No, you're not, and you're never going to make everybody happy in anything you do. So, but I do think it's really, I mean, the women's game for the most part has relied on 18-year-old freshmen coming in and hasn't done this. I think it's only 15% of NCAA players in the NCAA are on the women's game are internationals. Where on the men's side, we're approaching 45%.
Right.
So
Well, the
big
women's is
difference.
decreasing, while the men's has been increasing, because, simply because of the explosion of, just in the time I've been here, the explosion of the club scene over in Europe, and a lot of those European female players, their only option was to come to America to play college, and now they're being paid to stay. So, they're keeping their top talent over there, and I've seen a big decrease in, like the Hofstras, who used to that used to be half their roster. They've kind of lost all of those pipelines.
Yeah, no, I know the Hofstra staff real well. In fact, they used to recruit three or four of our kids every year. And it
Yeah.
has changed, and you're exactly right. The men's side for our audience, the men's side is even 10 years ago, 12 years ago, the men would the attitude of the men and their parents and just the population in general was, look, if you're good, play pro. If not, go to work.
Right,
That was it.
right.
The American college thing system wasn't even a thing, really. And it
Yeah,
was maybe
yeah.
10, 12% of the kids were coming over here, and it was mostly because of the education
Yeah,
thing. You know, I mean,
for
over in
sure.
England, if you take your BTECs, which is so you've got the A levels and BTECs. A levels is a test that kids take going into their senior year, and then that determines whether they're going to go to college or not. If they go on the BTEC route, then they're basically saying you're going to go into the trades. And there's a lot of
Right.
kids that don't want that. They still want
Yeah,
to go to
yeah.
college. So then their option was to come to the United
Right.
States and come to university here, because they wouldn't
Yeah.
allow them in university in England. So now it's become so common that kids are using it as a plan. So when they get into their final grade in high school, they're deciding that, hey, look, if I don't get signed pro, then I'm going to the United States, and
Right,
they'll get
right.
released from their clubs. So it's
Yeah.
becoming quite common. And like you're right, on
Yeah.
the women's side, nobody cared over there
Yeah.
about women's soccer in
Right.
Europe, and
Right.
teams weren't putting money
Yeah.
into it, and there wasn't any leagues that really per se to
Yeah.
talk about. But since the United States was destroying everybody so badly on the
Yeah.
world level, and since many of these countries got more progressive and wanting to
Yeah.
take care of the women, it became a thing. And you're right, now they have a
Yeah.
pathway, now they have a choice, they don't have to come over
Yeah.
here. So
Yeah.
you're
For
right,
sure.
men's is
Yeah.
going up, women's is going down, or leveling at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's different how it's amazing how different the two sides are.
Yeah.
The other thing I did want to talk about, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, and that's the women's timeline in recruiting. I mean,
Yep.
I remember when we had people were calling it the Anson Dorns rule, because Anson was committing girls at 13,
Right.
you know,
Yeah.
national team kids that,
Yeah.
you know, 13, and they were upholding those. Everybody was upholding those. There was no decommitting.
Right,
That
right.
wasn't really a thing. And then
No,
that,
it wasn't.
so yeah, no matter what age you committed, you stayed with it, and nobody recruited. And if that was the other thing, nobody recruited you. Nobody talked to you. It wasn't a thing. Now it's, I'm committed, but I'll continue to search for my options.
Yeah.
I'll continue to take phone calls. I'll continue to have conversations. And of course, the timeline now is, you know, can't legally start talking to a kid until sophomore year, although there's a lot of coaches out there that obviously break that rule, because there's no other way a kid commits on June
Right.
15th.
Right.
Unless they've already been on visits and
Right.
gotten offers and all of that. So coaches are
Yeah.
not abiding by that. So what do you think of that timeline?
Well, I believe it or not, I think everything started to go downhill when they changed the rule, and eliminated, the communicating with them all through high school. And I, yeah, there were some schools committing kids early, but it wasn't a ton. And the advantage of the old system was you could really get to know players. They could really get to know you over the course of like a year or two. I mean, we had players that would come on unlimited unofficial visits. They'd come two or three times to make their final decision. The
Come
NCAA
and see two or
controlled the
three games a
communication.
year.
Yeah,
Come watch some
yeah. So
practices every year.
you really got to know each other. I think it was very beneficial for both sides. And NCAA controlled the communication, so we weren't. I mean, it was kind of silly because that was back in the day. They could call you, and if you didn't answer, you couldn't call them back. It was kind of
Right,
weird, but
right.
I understood why they did that. So, kids weren't being hounded, but I liked it. I thought it was a much better process and a much better,
Do you think
especially
that's
for
why
the
one of the
players.
reasons why we had less unhappy players too? And
Yeah, I
you
100%
think that's
do.
one of the reasons, maybe I should say, is this one of the reasons
100%.
why kids are transferring so quickly? Because they have to commit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't
Yeah,
have
so
time to get
I
too
mean
close to it.
it's resulted in a couple of horrible things when they change it. Number one, the June 15th deadline, and it's such a big deal, and I will no one has ever been able to explain to me why on earth that we can talk and commit kids on June 15th, but they're not allowed to come visit you until August 1st. Like that in any universe, like why isn't it the opposite? I have no idea. So that's number one is, the big wigs are calling kids and I mean, who can blame them? They're competing for the best kids. They have to operate in that world and say, hey, here's your offer. You have 10 days. And the player says, well, I can't wait till August 1st to come visit. And they say, nope, we're going on to number two behind you. So kids are committing so uninformed, so much pressure, that of course, that's why, people don't get a good feel for the school. They don't get a good feel for the coaches. So you're going to have much, much more transfers. I think that started immediately. Yeah, I think, our world is a little bit different, and the mid majors, I don't think we feel as much pressure to commit kids, nor we've never committed a kid ever who hasn't visited our school because we don't want to. Even if we get players who say they're ready to commit on June 15th, we may say, okay, well, you can do a loose commitment. But the other thing that this is kind of a minutia, but it's just created such chaos for everyone is in the old days, because you could have communication, the players kind of knew where they stood, right? Like if you were a Power Four player, you were talking to lots of Power Four coaches who could legally tell you, we want you. Like they could offer them. They knew exactly where they were in their chart. As soon as they went to June 15th after sophomore year, they
Right.
created just this big guessing game. And our emails went from, I don't know, and they're tenfold. My emails and every coach in the country is tenfold now what it was in 2019. And that's because kids don't know where they stand. So we're getting emails from, we get so excited. We get emails from national team players and kids that are top 5% in the country. We're like, oh, wow. We get so excited. We waste time calling them on June 15th. They waste time talking to us, until about a couple days go on. And now they see where they're stacking up and what conversations they had. And then it's like, okay, bye. But, prior to all this, we didn't. There wasn't as much time wasting going on, and that drives me crazy because now kids have to have an A, B, C, D list, not just for the reduction in timeline and awareness of where they are, but I think just the overall state of recruiting and the portal and threats of being decommitted and all these reasons. The social media, like their club coaches are, I know for a fact, their club coaches are telling them, well, you should have a list of no less than 50 schools. And I hear that and I'm like, really? Like that just seems unreasonable to me. Or that's just talking about a label and sending out to 50 Division I schools, like some of which you have no idea why you're sending them an email and no level of personal interest or even what state they're in, so that piece is crazy too, because I think previously when everybody sort of had a better idea of their interest, they were focusing on probably 8 to 10 to 12 schools, and now it's just insane. So I don't like the timeline now at all.
Yeah, boy, I could not agree with you more. And everybody thinks I'm an old man yelling at the clouds, as the meme says, when I talk about this. Well, that's just not the way it is anymore. It's like, I just don't
Right.
think it's healthy for these kids. I think it puts too much pressure on these kids too soon. And the other thing, the thing I like best about my job is being able to get in front of, say sophomores, right? And being able to guide them in the right directions to the right schools. Otherwise, when I ask a family for their list, it's the usual suspects. It's Stanford and Cal and Notre Dame and UNC and I want and I quite often I do say, I said, what'd you do? Go through the RPI and pick the top 20 schools in the country. That's what you did. That's what your list is. And it's like, I didn't know you were on the national team. Oh, I'm not. Are you in the regional pool? No, I'm not in the regional pool. Are you the best player on your team? No, I'm maybe the 12th or 13th best player on my team. It's like, is your team the number one team in the country? No, we're like the, 50th or 60th best youth team in the country. So it's like, wait a minute, then what are we talking about here? Because you can't take the 50th best team in the country and you're the 15th player on that team just in that world. Never mind the national team kids from Norway or from England that want to come here, or not even counting that, you're maybe number 1500 in the nation and you want to go to Stanford. Well, you can, and I was, you can go to Stanford, just get into Stanford. I'm not saying you can't go to Stanford or can't go to Notre Dame, get into those schools, but you're talking about playing soccer, and that is not realistic. And once you get that through to the family, and once the family accepts that that's not realistic, and they should be not focusing on the label of the school, but there are plenty, if you want high-end academic, I will put a Johns Hopkins education up against a Stanford education
For
in any
sure.
day. And one's Division three and one's Division one. So, what are we talking about here? Social media. I think that's what we're talking about. What you alluded to
Yeah,
earlier. That has a lot to do
that's
with
been
this.
it's been a driving force, and it's I talk to our men's coach, Chris Norris, all the time about it because he doesn't participate in the social media realm at all, but it's so it's the girl side is just so nutty, and I this might be this might be discriminatory statement in and of itself, but I've always said the girls girls are tend to be more drama than boys, and I think the girls' parents are more drama. I think the whole girls' scene is more drama, and it just gets it gets worse and worse every year. I show him all the time the graphics, and I'm like, we went from the teams doing graphics to now every single player, every single showcase has a graphic, and he just couldn't believe it. And I don't think the boy side is quite
It's not at all.
as
No.
crazy.
Well, no, it's not. And there, of course, there's some exceptions, right? I mean, one of my players who I love dearly, he's so great. His name's Fish, Colby Fish Sessions. He's at Utah Valley now, but he was really into the social media world and into all of that. And so you do get some exceptions, but on the girls' side, it's insane. And frankly, Marsha, I know a good chunk of them isn't the girls doing it.
For
It's
sure. It's
their
parents,
parents, or they've hired a company to do it for them.
There's a lot of people making money off of it. And now with Canva too, everybody's including me, is a graphic and AI as a graphic designer. I mean, despite my age, I'm self-professed the techiest person you'll meet, and I'm all about social media. I'm one of the biggest social media people. I do most of the graphics for our team stuff, and I feel like I have to when I hear people. I'm kind of envious when I hear people in my family say, "Yeah, I'm off social media. I had to take a break." And I caught myself saying that just the other day. I really wish I could, but it's so much a part of our job that I can't. That's how. I mean, I think when they changed that recruiting rule, that's when I started getting very into it. And Julie would make fun of me a little bit, like, you're spending so much time on our social media. But I said, well, they took away our ability to talk to these kids until they're juniors. So this is how we communicate with them now.
Right.
And that's the reality. It's how, and I, you know, we get tons of feedback on it. People say all the time, they just kind of feed the machine, you know, we love your social media. We saw this and that. And, you know, they comment on things going on in your program that they just are getting off of social media without you even having the opportunity to talk to them. So it's a crazy but important part of our whole world now in college athletics.
Do you, this might be an odd question for you, but I think it'd be, I think it'd be a fun discussion. Do you think that w would you have been able to play soccer in today's environment, college soccer in today's environment? In other words, with ECNL and MLS Next, I'm not sure my son would have been recruited because I couldn't have afforded the $20,000 a year these
Oh,
families are spending to travel all over the nation
I know. I
and
know. We talk about that a lot. Julie and I talk all the time. You know, we were teammates here at William and Mary. We both started playing travel soccer probably in, you know, the early 70s and really the inception of women's soccer. And, you know, everyone at our generation had to play at one time or another on boys' teams and this and that. And we're obsessed with soccer. It has influenced and shaped every facet of our life. We're not afraid to admit that. We hear our players so often say, "I don't want to be defined by my sport. I'm more than soccer. Don't define me by that." But we're always like, we love being defined as soccer because here we are, like decades later, we're still doing the same thing. However, we do have the discussion now and then, like. Because I can remember in high school, you know, I played basketball, I played softball only because I didn't have soccer in the off season. And if I had had soccer, I never would have played those other sports because I loved it and I craved it. But were we craving it because we didn't have as much of it? It didn't control our lives. We weren't traveling all over the country. You know, so many of these kids that start off on that path, I think just get so incredibly burnt out by the time they get to
Yes.
us. So
Yes.
it's hard to say. You know, we have that debate. Like, would we have been the ones that are like we are now and endured all of that and just eaten up every second of it, or would it have been too much? Like, it's hard to say. But yeah, a lot of these girls, and these are girls who are coming to play on high-level Division I programs who are just done, and we've lost more girls to that than we have to the portal, like probably, you know, times
Oh,
five.
you mean after they come to play with you, then they just have a conversation. It's like, I am so
Yeah.
tired. I just can't do this anymore,
Yep.
coach.
Yep. I could probably, and William & Mary is just such a great school that, you know, people don't want to leave here. So, I mean,
They're not leaving, right?
top of my head, I could rattle off seven at least in the years, you know, the years that we've been back, who got a degree at William and Mary and just left the program at some point, freshman year, sophomore year, junior year, senior year. We've had
Right.
all years, and they just come to the realization that it's, you know, the biggest explanation is I'm not passionate about it anymore, and it takes so much obviously to endure the college grind that it's not fair to themselves, it's not fair to the team, and they just get to a point where their heart's just not in it anymore.
I have this theory that I've espoused a number of times, but and we see it, I think we're seeing it happen in twofold. On and it happens especially on the women's side. I just don't see it as much on the men's side. A, when getting recruited, they make their list of schools so unrealistic that when they don't get recruited, it's not their fault.
Right.
But what they really wanted was to tell mom and dad, I'm done. But they
Yeah,
can't
yeah.
because mom and dad joke, you know, well, at least. I know I'm spending 20 grand a year, but at least you're going to pay me back with that college scholarship. And I'm
Yeah.
like, Mom and Dad, shut up. This is not a funny joke. Your
I
kids are
know.
listening to you. You're
Yeah.
guilting your kids into continuing to play. They can't tell you that they're done because they love you. Don't you understand?
Yeah.
Your kids do not want to disappoint you.
Yep.
And you've got to listen to what your kids are saying without them saying it. You've got
I
to pay
know.
attention to what they're doing
Yeah.
and not just do this for you so that you can tell your friends your daughter plays Division One soccer. And then the
Yeah.
other place we see it is in the portal.
Yeah.
Look, I went to school, I tried, it didn't work out, so I'm going to go into the portal. And coming out of the portal, they have no intention of accepting any other offers.
Right. Yeah, I think a lot of people go in there to die on purpose because
On
then they're
purpose,
not
because they're burnt out.
they're not admitting that they quit or having to admit that to mom and dad. They're just,
That's exactly right.
yeah. I think there's a lot of that.
I do think it's happened. And I'm sure it happens on the guy's side too. I just don't think it's the same numbers on the woman's side. Look, when I was recruiting, I was coaching men's and women's simultaneously for 8 years. So it's not a time frame thing. It's like, oh, they were years apart. It was at the same time frame. And of all the men that I ever recruited, I never once had a man say, had a guy say, no, I'm just finishing youth soccer and then I'm done. I don't want to play in college. But on the women's side, I would come across like true Division One players. I mean, players that were flat out studs. And they'll go, no, I'm just done. I'm not going to play after high school. It's like, whoa. Okay. Why do you
It is interesting.
hear that once in a while?
For
Might
people
approach
who are
a
recruiting.
kid. Might approach a woman or a girl playing, and then them tell you, you know, you're thinking, oh, we'd love to have you here. You're at least the type of player you are. And then them
Yeah,
say,
I
I'm
can't say
done.
that. I can't say I can think of a single person we were
Okay.
recruiting
Well, I
that
think ECNL
told.
maybe has changed that a little bit too. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, it's definitely, yeah, it definitely gets frustrating.
Yeah, but to your point, I think a lot of them just feel they just feel that pressure. You know, they put in so much time and effort with the ECNL or the GA or whatever it is that it's almost
Right.
like you feel like you have to. And even if the parents aren't outwardly putting pressure on them, I'm sure the kids feel it to some extent. They hear conversations, and you know, kids aren't stupid. They probably think they owe it to their parents, even if their heart isn't in it, to kind of see the process out. Like, what did I do all this for if I'm not going to play in college, you know?
Right. How about the love of the game? How about having fun while you're still a kid? Those are pretty good reasons to still do it. That's the funny thing that I hear. What's the point of playing youth if you're not going to go to college? Is the most insane thing to me ever.
Well, yeah, and it's the whole, like I alluded to before, hearing we started to hear this a few years ago, just became a very prevalent, and you'll see it all over social media and TikTok, even for a lot of the big time players that, you know, so don't soccer doesn't define me. Don't I'm so much more than soccer. It doesn't define me. And that's,
Yes.
to me, it's just such an odd sentiment, but I think it comes from the fact that they have had such a long, incredible grind since they were 10 years old, 12, you know, it starts at 12, the flying across the country and missing out on things. And they're doing adult level commitments, you know, for years and years before they even are 18. So it just results in a lot of burnout and mindset.
Yeah, no, look, I do, and before people think I'm knocking, I just came back from MLS Next Fest or Flex rather, and you know, we go to ECNL events and stuff. And I mean I like the fact that the kids can play against, you know, better competition. And there are areas of this country where soccer's such there's such a dearth of soccer, it's just not much that they can't get high level competition. You know, in some areas of the North or the Midwest or whatever. I mean, so that part I see, it bugs me in areas like Florida or even up where you guys are at, the DC metro area. You should never have to travel outside of the DC metro
I
area
know. I say that all the
ever.
time.
Or Southern California. Are you kidding me? You can't. Why would you travel outside of
I know.
Southern California and maybe North California once a year type
I
thing.
know.
So there's good and bad to it, and I get it, but I remember the first time my buddy out of Vegas was talking about ECNL for the first time, and he said, oh, new league, and we're going to be traveling to the East Coast. I said, what?
I
What? You've got Los Angeles 2 hours from you on a drive. You can
know.
make it back in a day. Why would you go to the other side of the country?
Yeah, I
And
remember. I remember hearing that for the
just
first time too.
especially like up in the DC metro area, it has been a hotbed of soccer since I was a kid. It's
That was one of the early spot for girls too. There weren't many, but DC, Texas, California, there weren't many back in the 70s, I don't think.
No, especially as you said, for girls soccer especially. Yeah, but DC Metro was one of them. So yeah, I don't know, but I'm not again. I was gonna say I'm not. I like the concept, and I think it's good. My advice to parents when I talk to them is, but you don't need to be involved in the pre-ECNL stuff. You don't need to be involved in sending your 10-year-old across the country and 11 and 12 and 13. If your kid is a stud at 15, your kid, no team's gonna go, I'm sorry, we've had the same players here for 5 years. We have no room for your daughter. If your daughter can help them win, they're going to pick up your daughter. Don't worry about it.
I have an expression I say all the time, if you're good, you're good. And I use that as an answer to, well, what about this? And then what if I'm not playing in the top league? And I'm like, if you're good, you're good. Like, nothing else really matters. Kids' talent will come out from everywhere. But
Do you guys recruit? And I know some coaches do. And this blows me away too. We only recruit from ECNL.
no,
That's it. You're
we would
not
never
playing
say that.
ECNL. We will not recruit you.
No,
That
this is how
blows me away.
I answer that question. And I'm like a big data stats person, so I'm constantly
Okay.
looking backwards and, looking at the composition of our classes. Our freshman class this year, coincidentally, consisted of two USYS kids that were super under the radar. They would have been absolute studs on any ECNL team, but just didn't play in them. And we have to sort of work harder. I think we've probably got to work 10 times harder than some other programs, if we want to get Power Four kids in here, and got to turn over every rock and be a little creative. But I will also say, is that last year we had to make some choices with our calendars and budgets, and we went to way more ECNL events than GA. And I think I got into a debate with someone about that, and I said, it's more economical. Like, if we have to make the choice, like, look at the
Yes.
stats. It's the stats don't lie. What is it? 75% of Division One players come from the ECNL, and
Right.
people immediately get so defensive. It's like, that does not mean that some of the best players in the country might not play in the GA. That's a fact.
Right.
But economy of scale, it's just more bang for your buck.
Players will go where the coaches go, and coaches will go where the players are. I mean, that's it. And that just ECNL has done. Look, economically, they did really, really. They've done really, really well from themselves. From a business standpoint, I understand what they were trying to do from a business standpoint. I completely get it. A little jealous as a businessman that I didn't think of it first, but they've done a
For
great
sure.
job from a business perspective. I'm just not sure it's in the best mental, in the best interest of the kids mentally and emotionally, and it's just
Financially.
so hard.
It is.
And I
But
worry about
yeah,
the kids.
I think out of seven freshmen, we had two USYS, one GA, and three ECNL, probably something like that.
Okay.
And the other interesting thing, while we're talking recruiting, that I always look at, and it's a point I always stress on social media big time come June 15th, is I always look back when the dust settles and our class is full, how we learned about them when we first talked to them. And every single year, at least two, three, maybe even four kids that we commit, we didn't even know who they were on June 15th.
Right.
That's always, I always like to put that point out there to kids, to club coaches, like we will find, you know, and I will post that. If we don't call you, it's a bunch of reasons. We may not know who you are.
Right.
We maybe haven't seen you play enough. It means you are not in the very, very top of our list, but you know, the top of our list are big time players, and we'll get maybe two of those, maybe three if we're really, really lucky. So, you know, then it goes downhill, but so much emphasis is put on June 15th, and we're all caught up in it. The coaches are caught up in it. We make a big deal out of it because we kind of have to. But you know, these poor kids, I just always picture the ones sitting home and their phone's not ringing. And but like I said, every year we could go through, you know, these are coveted spots that we give out. At the end of the day, they are from everybody, right? We're starting with hundreds and hundreds, and we get down to six or seven. And but yeah, there will be a handful who we had no idea who they were on June 15th. So gives a little bit of perspective
Yeah, and
to
that's such an
keep her.
arbitrary date, and these kids really do worry about that date, and it's like, man, unless you're on the national team, most of you kids that are average college players, you'll be fine. You'll find a place in college. Don't worry about it. You'll play in college. Not are you? You're not going to get called on June 15th. You're just not. Coaches only. It's one day, and like you said, it's. They have a list of their five or six their kids are going to call that day. Most schools do. And by the way, even then, unless you're involved in that cheating stuff that we talked about before, even then, it's an exploratory call. It's have you ever thought about us? We want you to let you know we're interested, and we're looking forward to tracking you. That's what it is. And getting to talk to your parents a little bit, and getting to talk to you a little bit. Get to know you a little bit. It's just an exploratory call. I've had a number of clients that have gotten calls from Stanford on that day and then never heard from Stanford again.
I'm sure that happens. Happens with
Yeah.
us too. We tend to call a lot, so definitely, we start with a very, very big funnel, and it just gets whittled down slowly over the next year.
I've talked about this before, but explain to people that don't know what a war board is and what it looks like.
I mean, it's probably varies a little bit from program to program and level to level. You know, where our program is right now, we have worked really, really hard since we've been here. You know, we started a couple of years before COVID, and then we had COVID. Everybody had a reset. It was like you lost a couple of years and almost started over to some extent. But we now are in a really good place where our target are our Power Four level kids. You know, we would love to have a whole team full of them, and I think, you know, right now we're getting there. I think our entire starting lineup would have no problem being on Power Four teams, and so I say all that just to say, like, our recruiting board is we shoot really, really high, and you know, in order for us to get those kids, we have to do more work. Because we're going to get a lot of rejections, and we get a lot of rejections even from kids that show a lot of interest in us. You know, we make it really, really hard and close. And you know, if I told you some of the schools we've been in the final two every single year, you wouldn't even believe it. And at the end of the day, they just, you know, want the label and and choose the Power Four. But you know, ours, we start off if we're going from June 15th, like our target on June 15th, we honestly will reach out to probably 50. And we actually have personal Zoom face-to-face calls with every single one of them. So we're not doing that in a day. We're doing it over the course of about 3 days, 10-hour days. Sounds like a lot, and it's probably way more than most people do, but it's worked for us. And when we look back and say, hey, we were just looking at last year's the other day, and it's like, oh, we got that one and that one and that one. So, you know, it was worth the efforts. But then that's just going to get slowly whittled down. You know, you start huge, and we've got that top 50, but then we also have another list that's probably 150 that are kids that we're very interested in continuing to watch. And, you know, the timing of the June 15th, I always hate also because we're kind of going into the absolute sort of dead period for recruiting activity, not a real dead period, but in terms of showcases and events, we're getting into our season. So we have all this hype on June 15th. You know, they can come visit August 1st, which, oh, thanks, NCAA. That's also the start of our preseason. So it couldn't be a worse possible time for kids to want to come to campus. I mean, I could do a whole podcast on that alone. And then we have our season. So, you know, I know the players will always say, you know, my phone just went quiet then for 3 months. And I'm like, well, if you knew the 8 million
Well,
things
yes.
college coaches were doing on a
We don't
whole
have a life yet
season.
anymore, right?
Yeah, like I'm lucky if I'm taking showers most days, let's be honest.
Right. People don't know.
Yeah, so then, you know, you pick back up. We went into the first week in December usually, and so now it's weird because it's 6 months later. Girls between 16 and 16 and a half, 17, like completely different bodies, players, everything. So, you know, to some extent, you're almost starting over, I always think, and starting, you know, to reevaluate, and then you're bored, you're eliminating all these people, and then your board's growing even more. You're like, oh, we've never seen this, but we've never seen this girl. Wow. You know, it could be someone that's written you for 2 years and you just never got a chance to see them play. And you're like, oh, we're idiots. How have we missed this girl? You know, she just hasn't made it onto our schedule with the other 350 at the showcase. So it's a process. And I mean, I think the biggest thing is because everybody talks about the ghosting, and you know, I hate that term, and it's you know, players have to understand it's so dynamic. It changes like every day, if not every hour, when you're looking at all these players and you have you're trying to get down to six or seven. It's an enormous task. And you know, I think players will have a hard time understanding. They were so after me. They told me on June 15th they wanted me, and I was top of their list, and they wanted me to campus. And then all of a sudden, like I never heard from them. And it's like, well, you know, there's always people ahead of you. You know, coaches aren't going to say exactly where you are, but no matter who you are, there's always a lot ahead of you, and there's always a lot behind you. And you know, somebody could have blown you off because they were talking to Tennessee, and all of a sudden they came back to us, and it's like, oh, well, now we have this forward who's way better than this forward that we really, really wanted. So we have to sort her out and see if we have a chance at her. So it's so complicated, and you know, the ghosting thing is it's unfortunate, but it's just kind of part of the deal, just because. You know, you have to, both sides have to play the game. You know, you're not going to tell a kid, oh, we have this forward from Tennessee who's way better than you. You know, that would be very insensitive. And, you know, you have to be sort of, you know, politically correct when you're talking to kids, and you don't want to crush them. And, you know, we try to be as honest as we can. But there's just always kids that are going to fall through the cracks, or you know, if they saw the volume of texts we're getting and emails, it's not intentional, I think, for the most part. And for some coaches who it is intentional, it's probably just they just don't have the heart to have the conversation with them and say, you know, you're not as far up as you used to be on our board. Sometimes it's easier just to not get back to them, you know. I do try it. My responsiveness is sort of based on the level of relationship I had with the player. And you kind of know that as a coach. You know, if you have someone who you've talked to a lot, I consider that to be like a relationship. You know, we'll say, okay, I have to call this kid. But if it's somebody who you know they were talking to a million other schools, they were kind of a little cagey with you too, and it was all text, and you know, you kind of know as a human being like who you owe it to. If you consider you kind of develop that personal relationship, at least I do, and I do try to honor those relationships and call those kids personally, and have hard conversations, even though they are hard.
Well, I tell you what, I know that families appreciate that hard conversation, even though it's not what they want to hear. They appreciate it. What they hate most and what coaches hate the most is being ghosted, and then you don't
Right,
have
right,
an answer. That's not fun.
right. Yeah, I know. And what I would
How
say to
is
the
the
parents is, because I will never, ghost, and I don't even, again, I don't like the term because when I normally do it, it's not like a deliberate, I'm not calling this person back. It's either an oversight or just like a procrastination. But what
Right.
I would tell them is make the coach tell you no, because if someone does that with me, I will not ignore them. Like if they text me and they text me again and they text me a third time, like, hey, I'm just trying to find out where I am. I'm looking at other options. If I get that a couple of times from a kid, there's no way in hell I'm not responding to them, either on text or a phone call. And I would want to think that most coaches are probably like that. They don't want somebody blowing their phone up, and because that does get to the point where you're making a deliberate decision to ignore them. You know, once you can kind of say, okay, look at my phone. I have 8,000 texts. Sorry, I missed yours. But if you've done it two, three, four times, you know that's not an excuse anymore. So that's the advice I would give your clients, is make them tell you no. And I tell that to people I'm giving guidance to in the recruiting process all the time. Like, don't take it as a no until they have absolutely said no to you. And you have to advocate for
No,
yourself. And
yeah, well, that's one of the things that's nice about what we can do. Because a lot of times coaches will tell us things they don't like to tell the family. So I can then tell the family, look, you're just not in the running. And that's the way it is. But I will tell kids that are listening to this out there, when you go to a camp, assuming you're not a, I'm not talking about 12, 13-year-olds coming to camp. I'm talking about of recruitable age. There's nothing wrong with walking up to a staff at the end and say, do you see me fitting into your program? Be honest with me. And most coaches appreciate it, and most kids don't want to do it because I don't think they want to hear the answer. So they just go, thank you, I appreciate it, and they walk away, and then they wonder, I wonder what they think of me. Well, it's because you're not asking, right? And it goes the other way too. I had a kid I helped. Wasn't even a client. I just got the parents on the phone and I just told them. They were saying, this coach seems to be really interested, but that they're just not committing to us. And I said, well, where did you leave it with them? I'm not sure. And I said, so you didn't tell them I want to be at your school? Said, no, we haven't. And I said, then call them and tell them, if you want me, I want to be there. And the dad texted me the next day. He goes, we're committed. It's like, jiminy Christmas, folks. So, coaches don't know that you're interested if you don't tell them you're interested. And what every coach wants is you to say, I have done my homework.
Yes,
I've been recruited.
absolutely.
You are where I want to be. You're who I want to play for. That's what every coach wants too.
Yeah, for sure.
Otherwise, a coach thinks that you're just continuing to fish,
Exactly.
right?
Yeah, that puts you in a different category with us, for sure. And in fact, I think because Julie and I went here, it's so personal to us. It's a very, very unique situation that no one else has. And
Yeah.
that's how we handle our commitment process. We never throw commitments out there or throw offers out there. If we want a kid really bad and they come for a visit, our wording is usually like, you let us know when you've decided this is 100% where you want to be, and then we'll talk offers, we'll talk financials and all that. But we until you're at that point, and we don't want, pressure or money to be the reason they commit.
I love
And it's
that.
why our culture is so good, because I mean, most kids on our team, like, would have cut off their right arm to be here. They weren't just taking the offer because it was the best one they got or because it was whatever. They did their homework and told us face to face, that's where I want to be. And the emails are the same. Like, our 27 class is done, and we get 8,000 emails a week from 27s. And the ones that say, I William & Mary is my top choice. I've been to your campus. I'm really curious to know what the status of your class is. I will respond to every one of those kids. But the ones that are just like, hi, I'm a 27, like, I don't have time to respond to all of them. But I think generally speaking, if you do put coaches on the spot and be persistent, like, you're going to be way more likely to get a response from them, for sure.
Yeah, no, I would tell every family you're looking for a yes, no, or maybe. Yeses are great. No, no's should be okay. And the maybe is, what do I got to do to change your mind to do a yes or no? What do you need from me?
Our entire recruiting assessment is yes, no, maybe. We realized very quickly after a couple of years here that's it's just the most efficient way. You don't need a whole lot of words. Like we know what a slam dunk is. You know, they're not many, but a yes is like absolute slam dunk program, elevating kid. You know, no is no way probably in any universe, and a maybe is. Yeah, we'll keep watching them, watch them again, but it all boils down to those three words. I
I love that.
talked to somebody the other day. He said, I think he said that they used to use going over film for their players. They would ask their players to go over all their clips, and they would have to rate their clips: me good, me bad, or I have a question. I thought that was pretty funny. I'm like, just like recruiting clips, it's pretty similar. Me good, me bad, or I'm not sure. You tell me what I did here.
No, you can tell in the first 30 seconds of a recruiting clip if it's a no. It's not
Much
hard, and that's
much
probably
easier
most of
to,
them.
yeah, much easier to eliminate with video is what I always say than because we've all seen we don't like videos or highlights because they're just very deceiving, and you can't. You don't get a feel of the speed of the game or the level of competition like you do in person. So, yeah, we always say it's much easier to see but to eliminate than the good ones. Like some you would get really, really excited about, but I always am pretty tempered because we've had so many of those that the video looks off the charts, and then you watch them live and it's doesn't really
No,
translate a ton.
especially at our youth soccer level, because I mean, even ECNL, and this is the other part people don't understand. There is good, there is average, and there is bad. There are some ECNL teams that are just it's bad. I've seen ECRL teams that are better than some of the
I'd agree with
ECNL
that.
teams, and there are way things are broken down into the conferences in the country. There are better conferences than others, as opposed to film of a kid that's been playing for the national team, or not our national team, but like a Canadian or Mexican national team or whatever. You see their film and you go, oh, this is just another level of play. This is very good. International play is you can tell
Yeah, for
by it
sure.
on the film that is different.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Last question for you. And I appreciate you spending so much time with me.
Yeah, I could talk soccer all day.
Me too. How have you guys used the portal? In other words, are you guys, a lot of coaches now are holding a spot or two aside of their recruiting spots specifically for the portal because they know that some stud's going to come through there and they're going to go, oh man, I wish I had kept that spot open. Do
My
you
answer is
guys
going to
use
be
the portal like
probably
that, or do you use the portal at all?
no. My answer is going to be a lot different. So in the 7 years we've been here, we've had two out of the portal. One and one doesn't really count because she actually graduated from University of Vermont with 3 years of eligibility left. A very unusual situation. And the other was a Hofstra transfer who we recruited like crazy during the process. She was from Long Island. Her it was she was a COVID kid in high school with COVID, kind of had just a freak out and wanted to stay close to home and some family things. So that was unusual too because we had a pretty good relationship with her from the process, and that's it. Now, that doesn't say like. We wouldn't love to use the portal to get a stud, but I think again, where Julie and I are sitting at the point we are in our career, having seen so much and so much experience, and also just being at a place that's so special to us. We played for John Daly, who is one of the most successful Division I coaches in the country. He is on our staff. He's on the field with us every day at 80 years old. He recruited us and every other single person in the whole program, other than the ones that we've recruited since we've been here. So it's just different. And we love, Julie often says she's so much, she brought me into this job and came in with so much experience when I was brand new, and I learned so much from her. And I often heard her say, when people asked her, like, how are you still in this after so long? We thought you were retiring after Princeton. And she said, her one of her most favorite things about the program, or about the job, is the transformation that you see from the time that you first have conversations with these kids when they're 16 years old until they're walking across the stage at 22. And I'm right there with her on that. I love it. It's absolutely mind-boggling. I think our senior class I put out there in social media, which I think is just explains our culture perfectly. They came in as eight. They're graduating as eight in a couple of weeks. When they came in as freshmen, we had a stud goal scorer who didn't miss a single game in 4 years, like scored all of our goals. We were very lucky to have her. Most driven, power forward type of player. We had another one who power four level, probably played a decent amount her freshman year. Another one, big, strong, athletic, who was probably got significant minutes her freshman year. Then we had another forward who didn't play at all her freshman year, an outside back who did play at all her freshman year, who ended up starting her senior year, not coming off the field. The forward who didn't play her freshman year ended up gradually working her way into minutes and was our second leading scorer this year after being a zero impact player for 2 years. We had
Wow.
one who was on the team for 4 years who really never saw any significant minutes, and another who probably would have been an impact player, but endured a couple of knee injuries along the way, never had a stretch long enough to make an impact, played a little bit for us finally her senior year. So that's kind of our program. And we're all about like making a like we feel if both sides commit to the process, you're going to see kids who don't play as freshmen. A lot of people love to say, if you don't play as a freshman, you're never going to play in college. And I don't believe that at all. And that might be true for programs who just continually reload with 22, 23-year-old finished products, right?
Right.
But like our seniors are phenomenal. And again, like I told you, could play at a lot of Power Four programs. And then we bring in these kids that just develop behind them. And that's our system. Like everybody has their system, but and if it weren't for the roster limits, sure, we'd be using the portal a lot more, but we're not willing to use the portal at the expense of our team. We're not going to cut a kid ever. Like it's just not going to happen here.
I love that so much.
Yeah. And we let all of our seniors, they're we have a, we don't have captains. They're that our leadership structure is our tribe leadership council, which is all of our seniors. So this year there was eight of them, which sounds like a lot, and you had everything from a 4-year starter to a senior who really didn't play significant minutes all 4 years to include this year. But she led our team as much as the 4-year starter. And guess what? Her leadership was very powerful, especially when you're talking about freshmen who are looking at her, who's like defends our culture more than anyone and has never really stepped on the field.
Wow.
So yeah, that's a little bit different, and I think it does result in people not leaving because they feel like they have an ownership in the program, and they look forward to that. They have something to look forward to, and they from the time they're freshmen learn from the previous TLCs, and they can't wait till they're in that role. And so yeah, it's different, but it works for us. Probably, we're not going to win the national championship, but nor is anyone else, except for a handful,
Well,
right?
and there's the part that people, come on, especially on the women's side. We've seen some surprises on the guy's side. We've seen Vermont and Marshall, and we've seen it. But on the women's side, if you look at who was the national champion over the past 30 years, it's the same five, six schools. Can you think of any surprises that snuck in there?
No. I mean, I
No, we
think
can't really say Santa Clara was a surprise because they were winning them 20 years ago, and then they won it. What COVID year, and
they've always had
not
a
really
pretty
a
strong college
surprise.
program. Some outliers maybe, but yeah, they're always like there probably has never been a team outside the top 10 Certainly 20,
No,
but
no, no. And there probably will never be. Now, more than ever, there will never be because, we've got schools. I always also almost name schools, but I don't want to embarrass anybody. But there are schools, Power Four schools out there paying multiple players over $100,000 to play for them. And William and Mary's not going to be doing that. And Cal
Nope,
State Northridge isn't going to be doing it. They don't have the money. Just don't.
no,
So,
we don't even have 28 scholarships,
right.
nor do most, and the NCAA like blew the
Most
whole
don't.
parity thing out of the water when they created that. That just makes the rich get richer. And it also, but that's also, I think, contributed to the portal too, right? Because we've lost kids again in Final Two with players that we make a living on those Power Four players that are like roster 16 through 28, right? But if
Right.
they're now getting a full ride, they don't know where they stack up. They think, oh, I'm getting a full ride. I'm going to go here and play. And, they're just going to end up in the portal once they realize that even though they're on a full ride, they're number 26 on the roster. So.
Yeah, I've often wondered what would happen if some of those kids, where these schools, some of these schools are having six, seven, eight kids transfer every year that
Oh,
are
I
on full
know.
rides. What would happen if those six, seven, eight kids all banded together and say, "We're not leaving"? All of a sudden, that coach, what are you going to do? You're not going to play seven, eight players, and now you have seven or eight less scholarships
I know,
for
and
four
that's what,
years.
that's like a whole nother podcast, but it's something that's so misrepresented and misunderstood on social media is the whole scholarship deal, because people think you can pull scholarships and you cannot. Like it's
Right.
presented to kids and parents like, well, we're not inviting you back to the team. We're happy to usher you into the portal. So kids think, well, as soon as they go in the portal, that's the trigger. As soon as you go in the portal, then we have the right to take your scholarship away. But like you said, if those seven, eight kids said, no, thank you, we're just going to stay here at P4 University, then they can't take their money away. And people don't know that. I mean,
And these coaches
it
would have to change their tactics.
yeah, because people talk about the 1 year renewable, and it's like, yeah, they're 1 year renewable, but it also says you're only allowed to not renew. You can't not renew it due to performance, due to
Due to athletic
injury.
performance, right?
That's why, they're so quick to usher them into the portal, because as soon as they're in the portal, that's the trigger for the money. It's like, oh, you're in the portal. But so many, I bet if you polled like student athletes on teams and parents, it would be something like 80 to 90% would think you could be cut and have your scholarship taken away, because that's like how it's presented to them.
Yeah, it's very dishonest, and I post that every once in a while. I've got a couple posts that I just save, and I just repost them every once in a while. That's one of the ones I like to remind people of is what the NCAA Division I rules are with regarding scholarships, because kids need to know their. I think it's fair that kids know what their rights are. Well, thank you again for coming on.
Yeah,
I
this
would
has been
love to be
great.
able to invite you back again sometime soon.
Sure,
And maybe
anytime.
after the rules are passed and we
Yeah,
know
that would be
what's
good. We
going
can
on.
talk about it more specifically. Why waste the time now before it's a done deal, but looks like it's going to happen, right?
I think it is, but I yeah, we'll wait to see what happens, and then we'll watch the myriad of lawsuits be filed the next day.
I know. Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure. We'll talk soon then once all the dust settles on this.
All right. Thank you again. Really appreciate it.